content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello there. This is Fred Brack reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting our podcast for over 15 years. They can reach at 919-781-1973. And now we're going to return to the April 2022 issue of Our State magazine, celebrating North Carolina this month with the North Carolina State Parks issue. So let's get right to it with a love letter to William B. Umstead State Park. I started out by going to the book, hiking a few miles on a well-trodden way called the Company Mill Trail. But as the marked footpath arches over a wooded rise, I spot a subtle opening off to the side where sprigs of greenbrier are snipped at waist height. Looking carefully, I can make out an indistinct opening in the vegetation. It's a deer trail, subtle and inviting. Off trail I go. And by the way, I would be T. Edward Nickens. This sort of hiking isn't for everyone, but it's perfectly suited to me. I'll accept spiderwebs in my hair for the discovery of some secluded hillside devoid of human presence. And I don't mind the feeling of not knowing exactly where I am when it plays off with the thrill of losing myself in a big piece of woods. Which is surprisingly easy to do in William B. Umstead State Park. Umstead is the sort of central park for the Triangle area, a 5,000-acre respite from the hubbub of urban life. Being so close at hand, it's called to be many things to many people. Hikers, bikers, horseback riders, and its trail network goes a long way toward giving users their space. Maybe horses too, I don't know. But as I follow a furrow of gently disturbed leaves along the forest floor, I'm soon off the map, yet just where I hoped to be. My deer trail skitters across a pitch and roll of the forest where history is writ in the land. Two American Indian trading routes skirted these woods, the Okanoche Trail to the north and the PD Trail to the south. Sherman's troops hiked along the park's Crabtree Creek on their way to Bennett Place in Durham. In the early 1900s, rows of cotton clad nearly every corner of what is now Umstead State Park. My deer trail winds around piles of quartz rock, likely stacked by farmers plowing their fields. By the 1930s, many local farms had been abandoned as constant cropping wrung fertility from the soil. Most of the land was sold to government agencies in 1934, and four civilian conservation corps camps were sited across the ruined landscapes. Today, dams, cabins, and picnic shelters speak of the CCC's legacy, and the park's soaring oak and hickory and sweet gum evidence the healing hand of nature. I follow the deer trail for half an hour until I see the colored jackets of other hikers. I wait for them to pass before I rejoin the designated trail. Umstead is a place rooted in all that came before. To truly experience that, you just have to put one foot in front of the other and know that veering off the beaten path every now and then might be the best way to get where you're going. And speaking of getting where you're going, under the title North Carolina State Parks Memories Made Here, this is an article entitled Ants Go Marching. In Wayne County, the effects of time and nature are visible at Cliffs of the Noose State Park, where for millions of years, the river has carved a winding path to the sea. A closer look at some of the park's tiniest residents provides insight and answers to questions great and small. This is written by Eleanor Spicer Rice. There are questions we ask ourselves to pass the time. Many of those questions, for me, concern matters of quantity. How many minutes does the stoplight take? I'll ask myself, checking the dashboard clock. Or, look, how many leaves do you think there are in that tree? I'll ask my little boys. Cliffs of the Noose State Park raises an array of questions in quantity. The place formed when the Earth's crust shifted. How many years ago? Millions of years. The shift caused the river to bend. The river's bend wore away the land. How much land did it wear away? 90 feet, top to bottom, 600 yards across. To get to the park, you travel down two-lane eastern North Carolina farm roads past scattered houses under a sky opened by tree-bare fields. Spring pushes in, and with the car windows down, the world offers up the heady, nubile scent of ready fields, fields waiting to grow soybeans, hay, and corn. Once you reach the park's entrance, the fields stop. The sky becomes tangled in a tunnel of branches. The smells change from those of cultivation to those of the wild world. The sweet scents of pine bark and rotting leaves, the luxuriant loamy riverbed, the moist mosses and lichens blend and reverberate throughout your senses. I can't remember a time when I didn't know the cliffs. My parents hefted my brother and me around the 6 miles of bow-steepled trails before we could walk. In the visitor center, we held the Flintstones-like speakers to our ears to hear local voices tell us about the park's history, the rocks, the people, and the wild things there. My mother took us to the lowland groves where cypress knees poke from the mossy earth like gnome hoods. "Here's where the fairies live," she would say, and we would strain our eyes for magic glimmers darting between the roots. "Do you see them? Is it time for their tea party with the rabbits? How many fairy houses do you see? How many? How long?" My father took us to the highland, the 90-foot drop that overlooks the forest and the Noose River's gentle bend. The cliffs are striated like those space images of Jupiter, colorful, earthy layers, revealing hundreds of years, then thousands, then millions, as your eyes make their way from top to bottom. "I once tried to hide on the side when I was a boy," my father would say each visit, "and I fell off." "How long ago was that?" we'd ask. "How far did he fall?" But these are small questions, human questions, tiny amounts, immediate personal matters of abundance and time. The quantity of the cliffs spans vast and deep. The plants, more than 400 species have grown wild here. The galax, a plant that more commonly is found in the mountains, supplies milky wands of flowers to the understory. Curtains of Spanish moss, a cousin of the pineapple, grow at the cliffs near the westernmost part of its range. The slopes of Virginia pines can fool a wanderer into thinking they are no longer on the coastal plain and have somehow stumbled into the foothills. The animals, too, live in abundance here. The otters gamble like frisky puppies on the Noose's banks. The coyotes, fox squirrels, raccoons, the owls, the modern parulas, little greenish-gray and yellow birds that nest in the tangles of Spanish moss. The summer tanagers, red as berries, flit between the leaves in the hardwood groves. Now my own children visit the cliffs where my brother and I look for magic. My children look for bugs. Their questions are different from the ones I asked when I was their age. "How many species of ants live at the cliffs?" my older son asks. "At least 41. A fellow ant researcher and I once found out there are many species in just a couple of hours one summer. That's 41 creatures as different from each other as lions are from house cats and house cats are from cheetahs. Some, like Temnothorax acorn ants, build their homes inside the nuts they're named for. Cracking the hulls will reveal a palace with tiny rooms, a nursery, a throne room, a trash heap. Some, like Strumigenes, strap jaw ants, have intricate long mandibles that snap shut on their prey. They're smaller than the apostrophe in the sentence, but there are top predators in their miniature realm. Others, like Formica integra, large red and black field ants, are more conspicuous. They pile mounds of bark and bits of leaves around tree bases, dig trenches to make ant highways between trails, and fan out, hunting, scavenging, searching all day. They're pesky, but they're native. Although they can't sting, or it's sting. I thought it said sing. You can't sting. They can pinch with their jaws and will eagerly spray a warning of formic acid to urge you to leave them alone. Formic acid won't kill you, but it smells strong, like vinegar. In some places, the dirt looks like a living thing with the number of their bodies crawling across it. Another question. How many ants live in the park? My younger son wants to know. The answer to that is broad. More ants than people in Wayne County, where the cliffs sit. More than all the people in the state of North Carolina. Another question still. How long have they been there? Since before Lionel Weil, an entrepreneur who owned the cliffs and donated the largest chunk of land to make it a state park in 1945. Since before folks came here from near and far to the nearby towns of Seven Springs, which was once known as Whitehall, to drink the healing waters from the springs, a gallon a day, before men fought the Civil War here, before the European settlers set up a trading post here. When the Saponi and Tuscarora peoples gathered between rivers to hunt and celebrate as sunlight skimmed the grass at daybreak, the ants were here. The ants came even before the tanagers and raccoons. The ants have been here, leaving their footprints in the sand, small but not insignificant, for millions of years. The noose shaped the cliffs, but the ants shaped the life abundant. They planted seeds, cleared away the dead. They chased off invaders and tended to the lush planet. They cleared out ferry houses and stumbled over our toes, disappearing in the sand at the noose's beach on the 11-acre swimming lake below. In the millions of years since the cliffs formed, the ants have been here. But how long is a million years? Supposedly, we laid out time, the years of the cliffs' existence, in a line as long as a yardstick. Millions of years before our yardstick, before the shift, shallow seas covered the land. Today, the shells from those seas poke out from the lower layers of the rock face. At the yardstick's beginning, you'd see plants, prehistoric crocodiles, duck-billed dinosaurs. Many of these things would flash and fade along our line like fireworks in the night sky. But the ants would be there all along. Humans would show up at the end, a hair's breadth on the yardstick. We have flashed and yet not faded. The ants remain. This world, the world of the cliffs, of the noose, has always been theirs. They share it with us. That's the problem with questions of quantity, matters of passing time. The answers mean something to us, but they've got very little to do with us. The river can carry away the earth in tiny mouthfuls to form cliffs. The ants can sculpt a forest with their own mouths. They can each make Goliaths. They have the time. A hair's breadth is its own quantity. A measurable width, an ant to a cliff, how far across that hair's breadth will each of us walk? Some things could be measured, but never will be in our lifetime. We will never know our weights as we sagged on our father's shoulders, or the amount of the noose water flung from children's fingertips into the lake. We will not know our own life's quantity, how long we will be here. Other things cannot be quantified, yet they still exist and will exist beyond us. The cold, damp scents rising from a forest floor in a spring. The fairy tales told in a cypress grove. The feeling of looking over a cliff's ledge, or of being encircled by trees, or of large human arms folding around our bodies, lifting us above the ants toward the sun, higher and higher to see the colorful bands of time descend to the river's bend. To watch the river moving its immeasurable water and life, rolling still forward to that ancient ocean out of view. Cliffs of the Noose Park are on Park Entrance Road in Seven Springs, North Carolina. Our next article is back to the NC Love Letters category, Gorges State Park. I blame the waterfall. Rainbow Falls is a wide curtain of water that drops 150 feet over a sheer granite cliff on the Horse Pasture River. It's something you'd find on a magazine cover or on a commercial for a really fresh deodorant, and it sits just outside the border of Gorges State Park. Hike the trail through the park, and you can swim in clear pools, rock hop between boulders, and jump from a ledge off the side of the falls. It's great fun, and it's where I lost my wedding ring on the first anniversary of the wedding, no less. I was frolicking in the river with my wife. The water was cold, my hands shriveled, and I was so distracted by the utter beauty of it all that I didn't even notice the ring slip from my finger. I blame the waterfall, but maybe I should blame Gorges State Park, a land that, well, has no place for nice things like wedding rings. Gorges protects a 7,100-acre slice of the Blue Ridge Escarpment, a geological wonder where the landscape shifts dramatically from rolling Piedmont to towering mountains. That shift happens fast, with elevations rising 2,000 feet like a great blue wall, as locals put it. The park encapsulates a handful of creeks and rivers that drop off of that wall, carving deep scars through the mountain as gravity pulls them toward Lake Jocassee in South Carolina. Waterfalls happen a lot here. You can see a couple of doozies by hiking Rainbow Falls Trail. But the real gems lie deeper in the park, where some of the dramatic drops aren't even on the map. Imagine that, a state park with treasures that it doesn't brag about. Gorges is like that, wild and unbridled. Most state parks are loaded with nature trails and electric hookups, facilities that attract RVers and elementary school field trips. They're to be cherished, but it's hard to get lost and hypothermic on a quarter-mile nature trail. Gorges State Park runs counter to those stereotypes. It's a rugged area of rivers, canyons, and waterfalls that defies expectations. I love it because it still holds mysteries and big adventures. And a tiny wedding ring sitting on the bottom of the Horse Pasture River. Our next and probably our last article is entitled The Art of Exploration. Through the eyes of Greensboro artist Katie Podracki, a challenging year was an opportunity for adventure. In 2020, she and her family visited every state park in North Carolina. Her paintings turn each park into a joyful kaleidoscope of color and memory. Looks like watercolor to me. Very, very colorful. Lots of blues and oranges and a Carolina blue sky in the background. Part of being a parent is knowing when to give up, give in, and go to McDonald's, which is why Katie Podracki found herself eating a Big Mac on Thanksgiving Day. The situation was another challenge in a year of challenges. Personal, accidental, intentional. For the Podrachy family, 2020 began with a spur-of-the-moment trip to Haw River State Park, where the children, Miles then 5 and Georgia then 3, busied themselves being muddy and delighted in the riverbank. At the visitor center, Katie picked up a state park passport, a program challenging North Carolinians to visit all 41 state parks and recreation areas. The ranger stamped the Haw River box check. "We never expected to do it," Katie says. "We just signed up for a soccer and ballet." In March, a true challenge hit. The pandemic, soccer, ballet, and everything else vanished in a single weekend. The State Park Challenge began to look like a parental and mental health prize in itself, and the Podrachys decided to visit every state park in the 9 months that remained of 2020. When Katie told a friend about the family's goal, the friend threw down yet another challenge, a painting per park. Katie is an artist. Painting is her pastime, passion, and vocation, and her work is featured in the permanent collections of 4 universities and several corporations. An Asheboro native, she graduated from Washington and Lee University in Virginia with a double major in opposing poles of biology and art. Maybe she'd illustrate textbooks, she thought, but no, instead she did a double duty working for and pursuing a master's in art at the Savannah College of Art and Design. She switched degree programs when her husband Dave took a job in Greensboro, earning a master's in teaching at UNC Pembroke, while simultaneously teaching art in public schools around Greensboro. Though she normally works with oils on a large canvas, southern, colorful, playful pieces, she says, Katie accepted her friend's challenge, switching to gouache. And now that's the word I'm not familiar with, G-O-U-A-C-H. I'm going to pronounce it gouache, I don't know, and watercolor, a medium that travels well and cleans up easily. For many of the park paintings, John Singer Sargent is a favorite artist, she says, and he had work that he did for a living and work that he did for himself, and those were of his travels, so she decided to follow his example. After a year of planning, traveling, and reserving Airbnb rentals, Katie now rattles off park names with astonishing familiarity, even in casual conversation. New River and Mount Jefferson are right there together, so you can do those during the same trip, she says. We went to Gorges over July 4th. So many rodeos and waterfalls, and they found at least 30 dugout canoes at the bottom of Lake Phelps in Pettigrew State Park. One of them is roughly 4,400 years old. With so many painterly possibilities, how did she choose what to portray? Except for Pilot Mountain, she avoided the expected iconic scene. "I like the side view of a place," she says. "It's like taking the road less traveled. I like to notice and celebrate scenes that may go overlooked, but are just as spectacular as the landmarks." Relying on photographs that captured the light and color of a particular park, she may take the landscape from one picture and the sky from another. For her Fort Macon painting, she combined one evening's beach sky with a photograph of her children playing in the waves. "But where are the children?" I asked, studying the painting. "Did you delete them?" "Absolutely," she says. "That was the sun poisoning day." She riffles through multiple studies of live oak skeletons from Goose Creek State Park. "I got kind of obsessed with those," she admits. Within the stack is a map of each of the 41 parks checked off. It functions as a kind of diary with scribbles along the margins. "Into the woods, dark and deep miles to go before I sleep," she's written. Half-remembered snippets of poet Robert Frost stopping by woods in a snowy evening, Katie explains. "Our son Miles is named for that very reference, and I love that this year of visits has been part of his journey." Miles to go seems to encompass much about 2020 itself, and yet there was this tree in Weymouth Woods. We have the oldest longleaf pine in the entire world. It germinated in 1548, Katie says. That tree made me feel tiny and insignificant in the best way. Imagine what that tree has lived through, and then along comes our little family in a pandemic. I marveled at that. That marveling also explains more of her artistic approach. In renderings of Falls Lake and Raven Rock and Crowder's Mountain, trying to figure out how to represent each park has been fun. I love emotional landscapes, something that evokes nostalgia or joy or reminds us how we felt when we were there. So she has no apologies for the winter sky and the brown grasses of her Haw River picture in January. On December 31st, the Podrakis visited Goose Creek, their final park. A storm approached, but Katie and her family held the fort, playing on the sandy beaches of the Pamlico right through the driving rain. And it was just great, she says with enthusiasm. Pre-pandemic, I would have said, run for the car! But this was the last one, so we lingered while the storm chased everyone else away. Though everyone asks, Katie is too wise to give a first-place ribbon to any single park. But she does have a clutch of favorite family experiences, including the High Shoal Falls at Southern Mountain State Park and DeHazo Mills Falls at Mayo River. And, oh, their late autumn Thursday evening arrival at Lake Waccamaw. She and Dave located their Airbnb, a quaint cabin on the shore, and gave each other a high five for its utter perfection, except the lock code didn't work. The cell service didn't work. The host didn't answer their call, and it was dinner time, and the children were cranky, which is how Katie came to eating fast food at 9 p.m. on Thanksgiving. Yet another challenge. Still, it was the off-season, so nobody was there, she recalls. It was foggy, and the trees hadn't lost their leaves yet. So we had that vivid red of the maple leaf trees reflected in the water along with the cypress trees, and could have looked at that forever. Besides, the Thanksgiving dinner I packed in a cooler was delicious the next day. Katie laughs again and turns a page in a collection of her watercolors compiled for a calendar entitled The Way Forward. I get a lot of joy out of moving colors on a page, she says. She decides in the end to declare a superlative not for a park, but for the challenging year of 2020. A year of car trips and children, trees and beaches, rivers and boulders. It was one of the best years of my life. That's Susan Stafford Kelly writing. There's a picture here. It says, want to watch Katie Podrakis bring her watercolor paintings to life? To see the artist in action and discover more of her state park, scan the QR code. Kind of hard to do on this podcast, isn't it? Or visit ourstate.com/Podrakis, P-O-D-R-A-C-K-Y. Next page, an ad says, go explore, which is what this issue has been all about. Our new 2022 travel guide is available. That's Visit the Heart of North Carolina at heartofnorthcarolina.com. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Our State Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Our State Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call the studios 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.